today on All Together Now, tune in to Tess Parker from Common Hands Farm. She talks about the Upstreet Farmers Market, held on Wednesday afternoons in the public square in Hudson, begins on May 25th and runs all summer. And Parker talked to WGXC Afternoon Show host Ellen Thurston and Tom DiPietro on May 19th. We'll also hear from Laura Marks of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, Michael Cole, the Director of Community Services in Columbia County, discussing their programs on the May 18th WGXC Afternoon Show. And the band Stage Fright is the song of the day on All Together Now, your community news show, Monday through Saturday, 6 to 7 p.m. on WGXC.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews.
From the WGXC Newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News and Weather Report for Tuesday, May 24th, 2016. I'm Philip Grant. At the top of the news, Katie Kosajowski is reporting in the Register-Star that St. Patrick's Parish Church in the village of Catskill will soon close its doors for good. The Roman Catholic Diocese made the announcement in Albany on Monday, May the 23rd. Bishop Edward B. Scharfenberger broke the news to the congregation. The church, located at 159 Bridge Street, was built in 1885. It has been in poor structural condition for many years. Scharfenberger said, and I quote, "The funds are simply not available for the major work that would be needed to restore the church's building and the rectory," end quote. Catskill Village President Heather Bagshaw expressed her disappointment at the announcement. The Bridge Street Church has a long storied history in the village and in Greene County. Bagshaw said, and I quote, "As a Catholic who attended elementary and junior high school at St. Patrick's Academy, I am deeply saddened by this announcement," end quote. You can read that full story in the Register-Star. Kate Seckinger is reporting in the Daily Mail that longtime local newspaper columnist Richard Dick Nelson has died at the age of 76. Nelson was a sports and outdoor journalist for more than 50 years, writing for the Columbia Green Media until his death Monday, May the 23rd. Nelson was born in Red Hook, Brooklyn, and began his career in the 1960s as a feature writer and outdoor columnist with the Garden Spot News and the Greenport Gazette. He moved to Greene County in 1975 and started writing a weekly outdoor column for the Daily Mail. His outdoor column appeared as often as three times a week over the years. Nelson wrote a weekly golf column as well. He also wrote for the Times Union, the Amsterdam Recorder, and the New York Daily News. Nelson was a parishioner of Sacred Heart Church in Palenville, a past Grand Knight of the Knights of Columbus, a member and past president of the State Outdoor Writers Association of America, and the owner-manager of the J.R. Shooting Preserve. Nelson is survived by his daughter, Margaret Muller, and son, Richard Nelson, Jr., a granddaughter and grandsons. You can read that full story in the Daily Mail. Lorna Sherrod Littleway is reporting in the Columbia paper that organizers of the Old Tone Roots Music Festival have withdrawn their application for a permit to stage a four-day post-Labor Day music event in Hillsdale. The festival features traditional mountain fiddling, bluegrass, hot swing, classic country, brass, Cajun, and contra music. Organizers met recently with members of the zoning board and the public, and several residents raised concerns about traffic and safety. Festival planners intended to stage the event at Bridalwood, located at 35 Sir William Farm Road. They anticipated approximately 1,100 participants, including up to 800 campers, for the advertised family-friendly event. Town officials expressed disappointment that Hillsdale will not be hosting the festival. You can read that full story in the Columbia paper. William J. Kimball is reporting in the Daily Freeman that advocates for the low-income residents say a state public service commission directive to change energy assistance program will help reduce the number of gas and electric shutoffs, but more is needed to make a significant impact. The commission's order requires utilities to provide $248 million towards rate reductions, more than double the current contribution of $136 million. Under the new requirement, Central Hudson Gas and Electric Corporation's portion of the subsidy will increase from $4.2 million to $12.1 million. The requirement gives eligible customers anywhere between $23 and $72 off their electric bills and between $34 and $67 off their gas bills. Current discounts for these customers are fixed at $18 each for gas and electric bills. Spencer Resnick, an organizer for Energy Democracy Alliance member group Nobody Leaves Mid-Hudson, said the order is a victory of sorts, but noted the crisis has not been resolved. He said the voices and input of working-class communities must be central to any solution. Resnick said, and I quote, "This is the first in a string of decisions that impact our members, and we expect the commission to continue to engage them," end quote. You can read that full story in the Daily Freeman. Roger Hannigan-Gilson is reporting in the Register-Star that Hudson Mayor Tiffany Martin Hamilton has announced the Figari Boat Club, located in the city's North Bay, will soon be open to the public. The announcement was made during an open house held to discuss the future of the North Bay on Sunday, May the 22nd. Hamilton said the fences that currently surround the site would be removed within a couple of weeks and then fishing will be permitted. The actual shacks, however, will continue to be roped off because of structural weakness and to avoid further deterioration. After the announcement, a group of former Figari residents expressed displeasure with the plans. The privately owned shacks were constructed without permission in the late 19th and 20th centuries along the shore of the Hudson River within city limits. The structures were cleared of residents in 2012 because the owners never had property rights to the state and later city-owned land. You can read that full story in the Register-Star. Matt Hamilton is reporting at Capital Confidential that Republican John Faso is going after primary rival Andrew Heaney in his latest television ad, slamming Heaney for falsely attacking his record. Both Faso and Heaney are competing for the Republican line in the race for the 19th congressional district seat currently held by Chris Gibson. Faso's ad intersperses clips and a narrator highlighting Haney's past, a recent column in the Times Union that called Haney's attacks, quote, "serious hypocrisy," end quote, and the Post Fred Dicker discussing how Faso is, and I quote, "being smeared," end quote. Faso's campaign recently sent Heaney a cease and desist letter demanding his campaign stop, and I quote, "knowingly spreading falsehood," end quote, in ads and statements. In response, Heaney urged the Faso campaign to sue. You can read that full story at Capital Confidential, a Times Union blog. The Daily Freeman is reporting that the New York State Police will be on the lookout for motorists and passengers not wearing their seatbelts beginning this week through Sunday, June the 5th. The effort is a part of the annual Buckle Up New York campaign. The focus of the campaign is on both drivers and passengers who are not buckled up as the summer travel season begins. You can read that full story in the Daily Freeman. And for our final story, the Times Union is reporting the Dutchess County 8th grader Alexandria Snyder joins 284 other contestants this week for the Scripps National Spelling Bee. Alex, 13, a student at Linden Avenue Middle School in Red Hook, won the 34th annual Capital Region Spelling Bee in February by correctly spelling the word validity. She has studied karate since she was 8 and is a black belt who competes on a tournament team. Alex also runs on the school's track and cross-country teams. The national competition begins with preliminary tests on Tuesday, May the 24th, in Oxon, Maryland, outside Washington, D.C. Rounds 2 and 3 are Wednesday. The finals on Thursday will be broadcast live on ESPN2. You can read that full story in the Times Union.
You are listening to the WGXC News Update. I'm Alana Medlock. Cornell Cooperative Extension is holding field meetings on hay and small grain management throughout the area, including a May 26th workshop on pest management and agronomy of rye, wheat, barley, malting barley, and oats at Kukan Brothers, LLC at 2329 U.S. Route 9 in Livingston. Lower corn prices mean many farmers are switching to hay, which is why the meetings are focusing on hay and small grains. The meetings are meant for both new and veteran farmers. And you can find more details and a complete listing of all the meetings on the WGXC newsroom page. U.S. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand urged the United States Environmental Protection Agency to add Wappinger Creek in Dutchess County to the Superfund National Priorities List in a letter May 23rd. The designation would allow for a remedial investigation and feasibility study to proceed and would make the Dutchess County site eligible for funds to conduct long-term cleanup operations on the creek that was polluted by an industrial park used for textile dyeing, manufactured glass plant operations, metal planting, ammunition production, and chemical manufacturing for 180 years, with toxins like mercury and polysilic aromatic hydrocarbons released into the creek. Quote, adding Wappinger Creek to the Superfund National Priorities List would allow the EPA to take the necessary action to build a comprehensive plan to clean the creek. This designation needs to be expedited to help protect the public health and mitigate the damage done to the environment in Dutchess County, Gillibrand said in a press release. Quote, in the interim, the EPA should also use the comment period as an opportunity to give the community updates on the current situation and answer questions regarding public health and safety concerns, end quote. Time Warner Cable reports Kinder Morgan officially withdrew its federal application to build the Northeast Energy Direct pipeline on May 23rd. The company said a few weeks ago that the market for natural gas meant building the pipeline from Schoharie County across Albany and Rensselaer counties into Massachusetts was not economically viable. Currently, the proposed Constitution pipeline along I-88 did not get permits from the State Department of Environmental Conservation, and the Pilgrim pipeline, proposed largely along I-87, is in the first stages of permit seeking. Read the full story at Time Warner Cable. Jordan Carlio Evangelist reports in the Albany Times-Union that Albany County Sheriff Craig Apple and Bart Johnson, head of TSA security operations at upstate airports, want to make it a crime to refuse additional security screening at Albany International Airport. But the New York Civil Liberties Union, the Roman Catholic Diocese of Albany's Commission on Peace and Justice, and a coalition of local mental health professionals have objected to the proposed law, saying there could be many reasons innocent people might need to leave a screening line. The article says those involved believe this would be the first law of its kind adopted in the United States.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News and Weather Report for today, Tuesday, the 24th day of May 2016. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Tess Parker is the first interview today. She's from Common Hands Farm, and she talks about the Upstreet Farmers Market held weekly in the public square in Hudson beginning May 25th. She talked to Ellen Thurston and Tom DiPietro on the WGXC Afternoon Show May 19th.
Okay, we're back. And we have a guest, Tess Parker from Common Hands Farms, correct?
Yes, Common Hands.
And you're here to tell us about the second year of the Wednesday afternoon farmers market.
Yes, it is still fairly new. So we're the Upstreet Market.
Upstreet.
Yeah, it's kind of a little play on words. It's good. So every Wednesday from 4 to 7 in the park starting next week.
Right across the street from our studio in 7th Street Park.
Yep.
Yeah, we can see it from here.
And is it going to be just like last year? You got more people, fewer people represented?
Yeah, we're kind of, we're really actually consolidating a bit to focus more on the food and really bringing a lot of food producers. And we had a tendency to have more crafts at one point, and we're really trying to focus back on bringing food, because that's the crux of why we started the market, is because Hudson had few options, you know, and to go and get food in the middle of the week, especially especially if you don't have a car,
right.
And
especially farm
farm fresh food. So,
but I know Ellen always would get a craving for some kind of craft during the middle of the week.
Well, we will be featuring. We'll be craving for crafts. We'll be featuring different crafters throughout, actually. But we find that it's more, you know, potent for them to have kind of a few weeks instead of coming each week.
Yeah.
I find the market really handy because I go to the farmer's market on Saturday, and somehow I run out of things, and so Wednesday is just right.
Yeah, definitely,
go
and that
stock
yeah.
up.
Yeah. Yeah, and if you're wanting that fresh food, it's just you need to restock in the middle of the week. Yeah.
Tell us about your
if you go away on the weekend, that's another big thing.
Right.
Tell us about your farm. Your farm is well represented there.
Yep,
generally.
Common Hands
and,
Farm.
And how many years has it been in existence?
So we have been this is our sixth season. Mm-hmm. And many people may be a bit confused, actually, because we've moved our farm. So we were pretty visible there on 23B for those years that we were leasing land there. And now we've actually, in order to just gain more space and have a bigger, more land to use, we've moved to Ghent, just outside of Philmont. So, yeah, we're really excited to be there.
I was surprised to hear that news because I passed you all the time going out to Claverick.
Yeah, moving a farm is no joke. It was a tough move. You gotta not just physically, but you know, mentally, emotionally.
So, did you expand what you grow in terms of?
Yeah, we're just gonna have more capacity to do better crop rotations. We'll probably be able to just do larger. You know, having space to do large crops of potatoes, onions, different roots, winter squash. We always had to sort of use supplementary land before, and now we can kind of have it all together. So,
and do you have a CSA?
We do, yeah. And part of our CSA is the pickup is in Hudson at the Upstreet Market.
Oh, on Wednesdays.
Yep, on Wednesdays. And you can, it's a market style CSA. You can choose your items from what we have harvested that week. There's usually a large variety represented. And so you can, there's three sizes of our share, and you can choose, you know, the size you want, however much you want to eat that week. And pick up Wednesday, 4 to 7 p.m.
So are there new farms represented at the Upstreet Market?
So there will be 10 Barn Farm, and they've been there since the beginning. Then we'll have Highland Farms, which is a, they do kind of specialty meats. They do venison and bison, and sometimes they'll have, you know, ostrich eggs. And so they do kind of specialty meats. We'll have Schober Farms, which is grass-fed beef. We'll also have some prepared foods. Magdalena's Mexican food will be there, which is always nice to be able to get dinner while you're shopping.
Is she from Valencia?
Yep, they're in Valencia. They may be opening a store in Chatham, I believe, as well. So so they're always very popular. I can't stop eating the nachos every week when I'm there. We'll also have a bread vendor who does biodynamic bread with wheat that he grows, and Darcy Butters is going to be new this year. She does kind of specialty butters and spreads with seasonal herbs and spices.
Was she there last year handing out samples? I seem to remember somebody that had that sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but samples. I don't know. Maybe the raw food samples.
Oh, well, it could have been.
Yeah. But and then we'll also have Gina's Kitchen with empanadas and other prepared foods that it's handy to have her cook you some stuff that you can eat for lunch the next day, or so kind of and all organic ingredients with that. Yeah, and we're also, we're actually still looking for a baker for we have bread, but, you know, different kinds of sweet treats mm-hmm. and baked goods. So if anyone out there is interested, our...
You could have a sideline going.
Me?
Yeah.
Me?
Sure.
I can't bake.
Oh, I thought maybe you could...
No, I don't know how to bake.
Okay.
Forget Besides, that. You have to get a proper, you know, you got to get a proper oven and all that kind of stuff, right? Don't you have to have an approved, right. I mean,
sure.
To be, yeah, you have to have a license.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
So, yeah, we're really excited. And so the market will run through October, starting next
Great.
Week. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
So 2 a week we have here now. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Because I go through my greens very quickly, Ellen. As you
do?
Know. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know. I'm a, you know, I love my greens. Do you have any arugula?
Oh, one? Yeah. We got some.
You have the
up.
Long
yeah.
kind? I like long the long.
Like the, yeah, I know what you mean.
Everybody likes growing these baby
Ours
things.
Ours are, yeah. Yeah.
The baby's fine.
And it's
but
spicier. It's, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The pepper,
like
more peppery.
Mm-hmm,
pepperier.
Yeah, we grow peppercress, too, which is a really, it's kind of like arugula, but sweeter. And that's a really good green to put in the salads, yeah.
So how big is an ostrich egg?
Oh, bigger than a softball, I think.
As big as a football?
And what do you do? What are they good for?
I think the equivalent is like 20 eggs in
oh, wow.
an ostrich egg.
I've heard that the bigger eggs are good for baking. Is that true?
I don't know. I would just...
be hard to measure, it seems to me, if you only needed... If you didn't need 20 eggs.
Right.
Well, last
well,
year,
you could make a big frittata.
There right. you go. Last year at my CSA, I got quail eggs. And, you know, it sounds great. I love them when they're served to me.
Yeah.
But preparing them myself was a real pain.
Did you overcook them?
No. Well, at one point I tried to, like, fry them. You know, it's like,
fry
it's
like a miniature
it's like
a, dollhouse.
It's like a dollhouse. Exactly. It's like doing dollhouse eggs. It's like, what am I doing?
They're just pretty to look
they,
at.
They are pretty to look
it's
at.
They're poach, right?
That's the thing good. To do is either, yeah poach or, yeah.
But then it's just, you just pop it in your mouth.
Right. Like, oh, they're good though. And my late friend Dan, Dabba Dan, told me the best thing to do is when you're poaching them or fermenting them, put in a beet. So they get a really cool color and a slight beet.
So they're like a little
yeah.
pink
yeah.
quail egg.
That's what he used to serve at his restaurant.
Yummy.
Little pink quail eggs.
Hmm.
Delicious. But it didn't work out for me because I didn't, you know, it was just too much work.
Yeah.
So, and as if cracking each one wasn't too much. That was so ridiculous. It looks so cute, you know, like a little play house.
Well, this is maybe a very silly question, but how many yolks are in one ostrich egg? Is it just
I believe
one yolk?
Just the one, yeah. Yeah, unless it's a double.
Sometimes, yeah, sometimes eggs
sometimes
have
double
yeah.
yolks. I'm definitely not an expert on ostriches, ostri.
Why did this come up, Ellen? You're obsessed with
that?
Because
she said
oh.
that somebody was going to sell
Oh, the Highland Farm. Oh, they actually have ostrich eggs. Okay.
I've seen duck eggs, too. They're pretty big.
Yeah, those are delicious. Yeah,
I got those at my CSA last year, too.
You did?
Yeah, I wasn't really thrilled with them. They're big. They're bigger.
So you could have an omelet
or
something with one egg.
This Highland Farms, were they there last year?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So they're ones, they actually package a lot of their meats.
Yeah, they
do.
Yeah. They have like jerkies. And
yeah, I had their jerky.
Sausages.
It was fantastic.
And, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really good.
I think I had some boar meat perhaps from there. I can't remember. Something interesting. Love boar meat. Like a boar ragu.
I've never had a boar.
Really?
Right.
I haven't either.
You make sort of a brown sauce boar ragu and you serve it with pappardelle noodles, you know, the thicker, the wider.
Mm-hmm.
Delicious. Delicious.
Mm. Bison? Do you eat bison?
Why not?
Well, I'm not questioning. I'm just curious to know.
Sure. Cat, dog, that anything.
Mystery meat. You know that mystery meat in the back of my freezer?
I ate horse when I was in Spain once. It's kind of yuck. Stringy.
Oh, maybe we should change the subject.
Sorry, Alan.
Yeah, I hope we're getting everyone excited about eating meat right now.
I've had that beef, too. That's Laurie C. You, was the person who would do that, right?
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. That beef was really good.
Yep.
So if you do you have a bigger crew at the farm now, or about the same?
About the same size. We're just needing to do it all more efficiently, kind of the move and the planting and everything. It's just been a tough transition, but ultimately we're so excited to be on the land we're on, and yeah, it's been kind of a wonky spring in some regards. But
so does this group stay together in the winter?
Everyone does disperse. It's
don't you have like a communal hippie crash pad in town?
Oh, that infamous that is no longer our homestead. Okay. But we do rent a house for our farm crew in Philmont. So
smart.
They have a new hippie farm pad.
That's smart. Cheaper out there anyway.
Yeah.
Probably, right?
Yeah.
Ellen, what?
Nothing.
Oh, okay. You went every Wednesday, I recall.
Most Wednesdays.
Most
yes,
Wednesdays.
I did. And you?
I tried to. I tried to. I would forget sometimes.
Yeah.
But I also liked the fact that there was prepared food there because somehow in the middle of the week, I'm tired of cooking.
Yeah, I think it's a really nice little relaxing kind of community event in the middle of the week. You don't have to... It's not a big event, but you can go and see people you know and eat some good food and the sun and the fountain. And it's a really lovely experience. And just I think the park is just, you know, it's any way we can utilize it is a great.
Do you set up at the Saturday food farmers market also?
No, we're not there. Actually, we're at two other locations on Saturday in Hillsdale and Ossining. So
Ossining, that's like.
Hillsdale sounds like a really good market.
I love the Hillsdale market. So shout out to them right now, I guess.
Yeah,
it's a great space because it's in this beautiful barn in a park, and they've got a great thing going on there. And
that's what we need, Ellen.
A barn
and part of our future planning for the city of Hudson.
Yeah,
a
space you know that's covered and
covered. What do they call it? They have it at. The Polish Federation of
I know what you're referring to.
They have the ham
shoots? Hunters or fishermen or something.
It's time for radio news about radio waves.
Thanks, 10-4.
You're listening to radio news about radio waves. Headlines from the ether. Headlines. Once upon a time, the few opponents in Congress to the low-power FM bill then pending in Washington, D.C., made up a fake compact disc and distributed it to legislators, claiming it contained the sounds of interference that low-power stations would cause over the signals of much more powerful full-power stations. Of course, giant full-power FM stations would interfere with small low-power FM stations if radio engineering was incorrect, not the other way around. Now that Congress has allowed two different low-power FM bills to pass and thousands of stations to go on the air, Radio World reported May 12th that the Federal Communications Commission made their first ruling on this issue. A Birmingham, Alabama FM station, WDJC, raised repeated concerns about interference from three planned LPFM stations, all with religious-based programming, just like the full-power station. Kimtron Incorporated, part of Crawford Broadcasting, claimed their high-definition digital signals were endangered by the low-power FM stations, but the FCC did not buy that argument, and still no one has proved that low-power FM stations interfere with full-power stations. This is Tom Rowe for Waveform Radio and WGXC. Next interview is with Laura Marks of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and Michael Cole, Director of Community Services in Columbia County, interviewed by Vern Cross, Rainer Blue, and Kamal Johnson on the May 18th WGXC Afternoon Show.
Slay, you want to do the introductions? Because Laura's here.
Yes, Laura, friend of the show, is back. I'll let you say your name and title.
Yeah.
She's brought another guest with her. So,
Thanks, guys, for having me back again. So I'm Laura Marks. I'm the area director for the Capital Region Chapter of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention.
That's why we never say it.
We never say it. And we've had her here, what, five,
we
six times?
Each time.
Never say it.
That's all right. I'll answer to anything. It's all right.
And your guest, if you want to introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Michael Cole. Thanks for having me. I'm the director of community services for Columbia County Department of Human Services.
Oh, community service.
This is a very distinguished show today.
Yeah, I know. Can someone tell me about Save Lives? Is there a video for Save Lives or
Talk Saves Lives?
Yeah.
Is that the one?
Yeah.
So it's one of our newer programs that AFSP developed. It's based on the research that we've done at AFSP, and it's a 1 hour community program. We call it an introduction to suicide prevention. And so it talks about what are the statistics, kind of, you know, what's the background, why suicide is important to learn about in prevention. Mm-hmm. And then it talks about what are the risk factors, what are some of the warning signs, and then how we can all in a community help someone to be safe and to have, you know, healing and recovery. There's also, you know, some 15 and 30 second PSAs that we can use to promote it that talks a little bit about mental health and how to help people get the help that they need.
Okay, Laura, we usually try to start out with the suicide hotline number, so if you don't mind giving that out, would you please?
Sure. So if you're in crisis, you can call the suicide lifeline number at 1-800-273-TALK.
I wanted to ask you about, you see a lot of things on Facebook, and I've seen this push-up challenge. 22 days of push-ups, 22 push-ups a day. For suicide, I guess for men in uniform, as far as our services, is this legit or is this something that the internet caught and just ran with?
Yeah, I've heard a couple of different things about it. So it's supposed to, the number 22 is supposed to represent the number of veterans that are lost to suicide every day. Mm-hmm. And I've read something that it's not necessarily an accurate number, but it's really a great campaign because it's bringing awareness to it. When we talk about, so it's doing something physical that can connect people with again, what the issue is. So even if 22 isn't the exact number, it connects people with what's happening with our military and our veterans and suicide. And it gives some, people always want something to do. They want a task. And so it gives them something that they can do to really promote the issue and make people aware of what's going on.
Okay, cool.
It's like the new ice bucket challenge.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, like, yeah.
Yeah, but there's no fundraising associated with this.
So you always bring us great guests. Tell us the connection between you and Michael Cole. So, tell me you did not think of that when you heard the name, right? The first thing. sorry,
right,
Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah, from Accra. explain the connection between you and Michael Cole, and just talk to us about what you guys have going on.
Sure. So AFSP has worked with Michael, and he's been part of our Columbia Green Walk Committee. So, you know, it always comes back to our walk that we're having in Hudson in September, but we've worked together for many years And really beyond the walk too, it's about partnerships. So AFSP can't do it alone. The counties can't do it alone. The schools can't do it alone. So how can we all work together to make sure that we have the programs and services that are needed in the community? So, you know, it's a great relationship between AFSP and Columbia and Greene counties. And Michael is one of those people.
Cool. So Michael, you said that you're part of, community service as far as, with human services, right? Or community service?
Yeah, it's confusing a little bit, but my title is Director of Community Services, and each county and city in New York State have a Director of Community Services, and our charge is to advocate for individuals experiencing developmental disabilities, addictions, mental health, to make sure that they have adequate services, that they're safe, and that they're maximizing their independence. And a lot of what we do is working on barriers and reducing barriers to services, reducing barriers to screening, and decreasing stigma. And yeah. Laura's organization and our local efforts in Columbia County have a tremendous amount of overlap in dispelling myths and educating all of us about what suicide is, what it's not. This is a public health issue that is rarely seen as that. And there are many of us that experience it in a personal way. My uncle committed suicide, and I part of the reason I do this work is for him. We have... you know, we have a myth that suicide is not preventable, and that we're here to say that there are things we can do to reduce risk, to care about one another, to notice signs, and to educate the public about what isolation and hopelessness can do to any of us.
What part does mental illness play? Or could play in a suicide as far as the numbers are concerned?
Some symptoms of mental illness, some mental illnesses include isolation, social isolation, and a some version of a distortion of reality. We all get in a position one time or another, sooner or later, it's been my experience anyway, where we feel like there's not a lot of future there. There's not a lot of hope. And it's time limited. It is a situation we find ourselves in where we can't accept realities. And we need support. We need to connect with other people. But the illness itself moves us towards isolation. That's not true for everyone. None of these things are true. That when you superimpose addiction or substance abuse on this, you're compounding it. When you superimpose access to firearms, you're compounding it. In an area that's rural, where social connections are sometimes challenging, you're compounding it. So we just want to get the word out that our services, for the county services and a range of not-for-profit services, are available and can help people that find themselves in that state of hopelessness.
You mentioned breaking down barriers or help getting past barriers. One of the things that I know personally is when someone has a mental illness, medication is important, and it's important that they continue to take their medication. But if the insurance lapses, and let's say the Medicaid runs out, or you don't fill out this or you don't fill out that, they don't receive medication, and that medication could determine whether the person is going to be stable enough to be able to control the urges or not. What does your organization do to help with any hiccup that might come into the insurance level of a person being able to, you know, refill their prescription so that they can continue on to at least jump over that hurdle that might lead them down the wrong way and compound with the substance abuse? Or because, you know, a lot of times it's a rumor, or maybe it's a fact, that people sometimes try to self-medicate when they don't have their actual meds, or, you know.
That's a wonderful question.
Wait, hold on. Yeah, I got to give myself the clap. No, I'm really feeling good that I'm asking wonderful questions all day, so I'm going to – I'm not going to wait for you guys to clap for me. I'm going to clap for myself. No. Okay, go ahead.
That's a difficult question to answer, but an important one. Barriers, insurance barriers are significant. Medication is one form of treatment in combination with individual group psychotherapy, skill development, supports, a variety of different interventions. Medication can be very effective. It's not the answer for everyone, and it's not the only answer for those that it might be appropriate for, but it is one answer. And whether it's medication or psychotherapy or any of those other services I mentioned, you're right. The access, based on the insurance you have and the copay and the deductible and all that stuff, can be a real barrier. I cannot say that Columbia County Department of Mental Hygiene's of Human Services Mental Health Clinic can serve everyone in all cases, but we like to see ourselves as an organization that can address those hiccups, as you referred to. If somebody has a challenge and they're finding it difficult to get a provider, and they have insurance, but they're really finding it difficult to get a provider, I'd like to know about it. 828-9446 is my number. The other thing that may not be well known is that if somebody is not eligible for any kind of insurance, we have a way, our mental health clinic has a way of serving that individual. Okay. There are no single answers that are perfect, but mm-hmm. it is a big problem. And commercial insurance and some of the New York State of Health plans that come with high deductibles and high copays present a barrier, even if you're insured.
Unhappy about something you heard on All Together Now? Or maybe you have a strong opinion about an issue. Energy, agriculture, the environment, the Common Core standards, or broadband access. Don't keep it to yourself. Call 518-291-9492 and leave a 3-minute message, and we'll play it on the air. Leave a 3-minute message, 518-291-9492, with your take for all you hear. Again, that number is 518-291-9492. To leave a 3-minute message that may be played on All Together Now. Thanks for getting involved in your local community. Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Tuesday, May 24th, 2016. I'm Veronica Carter. Making news today, the head of security for the TSA has been removed from the job. $10 million is going to help landscapes devastated by wildfire, and a new interactive map will let you know if you live near a park that's been treated with cancer-causing herbicides. Here's what's happening today. Head of security for the TSA is off the job. Kelly Hogan has been removed from the position. It's being replaced by Deputy Assistant Administrator Darby LaJoy. Hogan recently came under fire during a House Oversight Committee hearing for getting $90,000 in bonuses, even though undercover agents exposed security vulnerabilities. U.S. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell announcing today $10 million to fund projects to help Western landscapes bounce back after a wildfire.
The projects include $500,000 for the Bureau of Land Management to remove invasive juniper trees that have grown after past year's major fires in the Bruneau-Owyhee area of southwest Idaho and eastern Oregon. Jonathan Oppenheimer with the Idaho Conservation League explains the idea is to protect the fragile sage grouse.
The conifer trees can pose a risk to sage grouse in particular because raptors and other birds of prey can roost in those trees and then kill the sage grouse. So a lot of this is really targeted around restoration of sage grouse habitat.
Secretary Jewell is also touring the Soda Mountain Fire Rehabilitation Site, where 280,000 acres of sage grouse habitat burned in a wildfire last year. The new influx of money will fund the second year of fire resilience efforts in 10 locations, mostly in western states. I'm Suzanne Potter.
Toyota's recalling another 1.6 million vehicles because their Takata airbag inflators can burst. Comes weeks after Takata expanded its recall in the U.S. to 40 million airbag inflators. They've been linked to 13 deaths and more than 100 injuries worldwide. This recall includes Toyota, Scion, and Lexus models from 2006 to 2011. An interactive online map can tell you if you're living near a public park where an herbicide that causes cancer is being used. More from Andrea Sears.
The map is the work of Reverend Billy and the Stop Shopping Choir, a group that calls itself an anti-consumerist direct action organization. It's mapping the use of Monsanto's Roundup, the trademark name for an herbicide with glyphosate as a key ingredient, in cities across the country. Savitri D., director of the group, says glyphosate, which has been linked to a number of serious health problems, is commonly used in New York's public parks.
The city of New York used it at least 3,000 times in 2014, and we're still waiting for more data from the largest parks in the city, Prospect Park, Central Park. The privatized parks have not released their data to us yet.
Monsanto says glyphosate is safe for human use and has been classified by the Environmental Protection Agency as practically non-toxic. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
Bayer's stock went higher yesterday on news that it's offering to buy Monsanto for $62 million. St. Louis-based Monsanto announced last week that the German agriculture and chemical giant had made an unsolicited offer to take over. More lawmakers joining in the fight against the spread of the Zika virus. With Memorial Day approaching and the mosquito season around the corner, New York Senator Chuck Schumer says the House should follow the Senate's lead in approving over $1 billion in emergency Zika funding.
The good news, we can still beat Zika. Bad news, unless we're prepared within the next month, that will be much harder to do.
Schumer says doctors and scientists don't have the resources they need to protect us against the rapidly spreading virus. In classrooms across the country, students learn about the role citizens play in democracy. And in about a dozen classrooms, they were hearing firsthand from their teachers who got to go to Washington, D.C. They were selected for the trip by the National Education Association after writing letters to the U.S. Senate asking for a hearing and vote on President Obama's Supreme Court nominee, Judge Merrick Garland. Patrick Chambers, who teaches history at Perry Meridian High School in Indianapolis, says his kids are taught that being a good citizen requires cooperation, mutual respect, and the ability to compromise. He says that's what lawmakers should be doing.
What are we supposed to say to our students? Because the way that this behavior is occurring is basically forcing us to change the lesson in which we explain the process. Because, you know, never before had there been so much partisan politics involved.
Chambers says while in D.C., he and fellow teachers asked for a meeting with U.S. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, but he turned them down. McConnell wants the nomination process to happen after a new president takes office. Not everything that farmers harvest from the fields can go to the market, but there is a way for them to recoup some of their costs and help others at the same time. Greg Stottlemyre has a report from Kentucky.
Farmers who deliver produce rejected by retailers to a food bank distribution center can have the cost of picking, packaging, and transporting the number two grade vegetables paid for. Mary Courtney, who along with her husband Shane, farms 30 acres of produce in Shelby County, says they first participated in the Farms to Food Banks program in 2012 when they were unable to sell some of their cucumbers on the high quality market.
It provided work for our workers. It provided a home for our product.
and it provided some cash flow. Do we make a lot of money selling the farm to food banks? No, we don't. But what it does do is it helps cover our costs.
According to the Kentucky Association of Food Banks, which runs the program, more than 300 farmers participated last year, delivering enough produce to fill half a plate full of fruits and vegetables for more than 4 million meals.
If you haven't noticed, the average price of gas has jumped by a nickel over the past 2 weeks to $2.32 a gallon across the nation for regular. Industry analyst Trilby Lundberg says the price of the pump is up 55 cents since late February. You're up to date. I'm Veronica Carter for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
Here is the regional weather forecast for the Hudson Valley and Capital Region.
The weather overnight should be partly cloudy with a low around 52. Wednesday, there is a 20% chance, isolated showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. Otherwise, it should be mostly sunny with a high near 82 and a low around 58. Thursday, again, isolated showers and thunderstorms are possible in the afternoon. Otherwise, it should be partly sunny with a high near 79 and a low around 59. And Friday, again, there's a chance of thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with a high near 80.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global, unembedded, independent, international investigative news hour, broadcasting live every weekday morning at 8 here on WGXC 90.7 FM in Greene and Columbia counties.
I'm Philip Grant, one of the contributors to All Together Now. Listen to Democracy Now! In the morning and All Together Now! In the evening, WGXC's collaborative hour-long news show at 6 p.m., featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported, hands-on radio.
Democracy Now! At 8.
All Together Now! At 6 p.m.
Here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
This is Tamara with the community calendar for WGXC. Go to WGXC.org and click on the community calendar to find out more about what's going on in your community. And you can even add your own event. Click on the Add an Event button and copy and paste the information about your local community event in. Soon folks like me will read it on the radio, and folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org in the community calendar. Wednesday, May 25th, Hudson's DPW committee meets at 5:30 p.m. and the legal committee meets at 6:15 p.m. both at Hudson City Hall, 520 Warren Street in Hudson at 5:30 p.m. and 6:15. Catskill Central School Board has its meeting at 7 p.m. at the Catskill High School. Catskill Village has its meeting at 7 p.m. Wednesday, May 25th at the Washington Irving Senior Center, 15 Academy Street in Catskill.
It's time for the Hudson Valley Song of the Day, a performance from a musician visiting the Capital Region or Hudson Valley, or who regularly plays around these parts.
Today we're tuning into Woodstock's The Band. This is Stage Fright.
Stage
the heart of a lonely kid. He suffered so much for what he did. They gave this ball boy his fortune and fame. Since that day he ain't been the same. You see the man with the stage fright, just standing up there to give it all his might. And he got caught in the spotlight. When we get to the end, you wanna start off? Start.